morning we're going to study the story of Saul. For many of you that are familiar with it, he was the first king that God's people had after they came out of the land of Egypt. And we want to study about the story of Saul because Saul had a wonderful beginning, but he had a very bad end. And Saul's problem was that he didn't obey God. And this morning as we read this and study about it, we want to think about what God has ordained for us here on this earth, how things are supposed to be. And I was thinking, I was trying to think of a good illustration of this, but if you went to some of the other countries, like if you went to Old Mexico and some of the countries south of here, their law and order is very poor. When you come to a stoplight, nobody stops at the stoplight. There's lots of accidents because everybody does whatever they feel like doing. If you don't want to go down there and look like you have anything, because the people who don't have as much will come and take what you have with a gun or knife or whatever they have to have. And I'm not picking on those people or anything. They just live in a land where there's not a lot of law and order. There's a lot of corruption there. And so as we see that and then we go other places, it's even worse. I mean, there are countries I guess we could call them terrorists. They call them guerrillas, but people just go around robbers. They're just bands of robbers everywhere, you know, and you can't be there. And so as we take a look at that, we see that's what our earth has degenerated into. But God had a plan in the beginning of how our earth should be and how his people should be. And that's what he's going to restore in the end. And so as we study about it and think about it, it will help us to understand why we need law and order. We have to realize that there has to be some absolute authority in the end. That seems like a strange thing, but in the end, God is going to rule everything. And he's going to tell people what they should do, and everybody's going to live by those standards. And we know what God's law is. The basis of it is, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. You know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. So in God's new kingdom, there's not going to be anything bad. There's not going to be disobedience. There's not going to be any of these problems. So the story of Samuel, I thought we would just read part of it out of here. Let's see, we could start in 1 Samuel chapter 9. In 1 Samuel chapter 9 is the story of Saul being anointed the first king of Israel. It was really never God's plan that the Israelites have a king, but all the other nations had kings, and so they wanted a king over them too. But what was supposed to happen is God was their king, and he dwelt at the temple. His fiery presence was there, and he spoke to them through Moses and the other men whom he chose to use as his ambassadors and leaders, and they told the people what they were needed to do. But they had really wanted a king in a bad way, so God decided that he was going to give them a king so that they could be like the other nations around them. 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 1 says, "Now there was a man of Benjamin," that's talking about the tribe of Benjamin, "whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bakorah, the son of Aphah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man, and a goodly, and there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he. From his shoulders and upward he was higher than any of the people. Saul's father was a great man of the Israelites. He was called a mighty man of power. And Saul was a..." When it says goodlier person, it's talking about his size and his features, you know, the way he was made by God. And it says that he stood head and shoulders above the other people. So Saul was a very big person. And God chose Saul to be the first king over the children of Israel. Now, the rest of the story goes here, and we don't have to read all these verses, but Saul's father had a lot of animals, and they had a bunch of donkeys that were missing, and so Saul went in search of these donkeys. His father sent him there. It was God's plan to cause him to go up to the city and meet the prophet of God who was going to ordain him king over the people. So, let's see. Let's skip down to well, I guess we're only going to skip three or four verses. Let's just read it so we get a good picture of it. Verse 3 says, "And the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to Saul his son, Take now one of the servants with thee, and arise and go seek the donkeys. And he passed through Mount Ephraim, and passed through the land of Shalisha, but they found them not. Then they passed through the land of Shalem, and there they were not. And he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but they found them not. And when they were coming to the land of Zuph, Saul said to his servants that was with him, Come and let us return, lest my father leave caring for the donkeys and take thought for us. He said, We better head back because we've been gone so long. My dad's not going to be worried about the donkeys anymore. He's going to be worried about us. We better head back. They've been gone a long time. Verse 6, And he said unto them, Behold now, there is in this city a man of God, and he is an honorable man. All that he saith cometh surely to pass. See, that's a true prophet. Everything the man said came to pass. He was someone who God spoke to. Now let us go thither. Peradventure he can show us our way that we should go. He said, let's go talk to this great prophet of God that dwelt there. There weren't a lot of them in this day. In fact, there were very few. Samuel was probably the only one. Verse 7 says, Then said Saul to his servant, But behold, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread is spent in our vessels, and there is not a present to bring to the man of God that we have. Saul said, We don't really have anything to take up there to give him at the temple or to give to him because we've eaten all our food. We've been on this trip so long. Verse 8 says, And the servant answered Saul again and said, Behold, I have here at hand the fourth part of a shekel of silver. That will I give to the man of God to tell us our way. It wasn't that they needed to give God's prophet anything, but they just felt like they should. Verse 9 it says, Before time in Israel when a man went to inquire of God, thus he spake, Come and let us go to the seer, for he that is now called a prophet was before time called a seer. They used to call them seers instead of prophets, it says. Verse 10 says, Then said Saul to his servant, Well said. And Saul didn't realize the guy that was with him had the money. The man had a little cash with him, a little silver. Saul said, Well said. Come, let us go. So they went unto the city where the man of God was. And as they went up the hill to the city, they found young maidens going out to draw water, and said unto them, Is the seer here, or is the prophet in the city? And they answered them and said, He is. Behold, he is before you. Make haste now, for he came today to the city, for there is a sacrifice of the people today in the high place. He had come there to offer a sacrifice. As soon as he came into the city, ye shall straightway find him, before he go up to the high place to eat. For the people will not eat until he comes, because he doth bless the sacrifice, and afterwards they eat that be bidden. Now therefore, get you up, for about this time ye shall find him. They said, Head on up there. He's up there. You'll find him right now. And they went up into the city, and when they were coming to the city, behold, Samuel came out against them for to go up to the high place. In other words, they met Samuel. He was headed out to do his sacrifice. Verse 15, Now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul came, saying, Tomorrow about this time I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin, and thou shalt anoint him to be captain over my people Israel, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people, because their cry has come up before me. So God had told Samuel the prophet the day before. He said, Tomorrow, Samuel, you're going to meet the man that I'm going to make captain or king over my people. Because the Philistines had been robbing God's people for a long time, their armies, and God was ready to put down the Philistines, and so he was going to make a man to do this. And he told the prophet, Tomorrow you're going to meet this man. Verse 17, And when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said unto him, Behold the man whom I spake to thee of, this same shall reign over my people. Then Samuel Then Saul drew near to Samuel in the gate and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, where the seer's house is." And Samuel answered Saul and said, "I am the seer. Go up before me unto the high place, for ye shall eat with me today, and tomorrow I will let thee go and will tell thee what is in thine heart." So Samuel told Saul, "Come on up to the sacrifice with me and eat with us there today, and tomorrow I'll tell you what you need to know." Verse 20, "As for thy donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, set not thy mind on them, for they are found. And on whom is all the desire of Israel? Is it not on thee and on all thy father's house?" I'm sure Saul didn't understand exactly what he was saying to him, but see, he hadn't even told the prophet what he was there for, but Samuel knew that he was looking for those donkeys, so he told him, "They've already found the donkeys. Don't worry about it. Just come with me. And you are the desire of Israel." I'm sure Saul didn't realize what he was even saying to him as he said those words. 21, "And Saul answered and said, Am not I a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribes of Benjamin? Wherefore then thou speakest so to me?" Saul said to him, "We're the littlest tribe of the 12 tribes of Israel, and my family is not the greatest in the tribe where I come from." So he said, "Why are you saying that to me?" Verse 22, "And Samuel took Saul and his servant and brought them into the parlor and made them sit in the chiefest place among them that were bidden." Bidden means invited. "Which were there about 30 persons." So there were 30 persons there to eat lunch with them. And he gave Saul the choice seat. "And yet Samuel said unto the cook, Bring the portion which I gave thee, of which I said unto thee, Set it by thee." So he had told the cook, "Take this special food, or a larger portion of it, and keep it beside you." In other words, prepare it and have it ready. And now he told the cook, "Bring it out and set it here." Verse 24, "And the cook took up the shoulder and that which was upon it, and set it before Saul. And Samuel said, Behold that which is left, set it before thee, and eat. For unto this time hath it been kept for thee, since I said, I have invited the people. So Saul did eat with Samuel that day. And when they were come down from the high place into the city, Samuel communed with Saul upon the top of the house. And they arose early, and it came to pass about the spring of the day, or the beginning of the day, that Samuel called Saul to the top of the house, saying, Up, that I may send thee away. And Saul arose, and they went out both of them, he and Samuel abroad. And as they were going down to the end of the city, Samuel said to Saul, Bid the servant pass on before us. And he passed on. But stand thou still a while, that I may show thee the words of God. So he told Saul to send his servants on, because he didn't want them to know what was going to be done. See, Saul was just a common young man amongst the people. And if his father's servants had seen the prophet anoint him and pronounce that he was going to be king, they wouldn't have really believed it. So he said, send them on, and I want to talk to you and tell you what God has said to me. Chapter 10 and verse 1, "Then Samuel took a vial of oil and poured it upon his head and kissed him and said, Is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? When thou art departed from me today, thou shalt find two men by Rachel's sepulchre in the border of Benjamin at Zelzah, and they will say unto thee, The donkeys which thou wentest to seek are found, and lo, thy father hath left the care of the donkeys and sorroweth for you, saying, What shall I do for my son?" So he told him he was going to be king, and then to show him that he knew what was happening, he said, when you get home, when you reach a certain point today, you're going to find two men there, and they're going to tell you they found the donkeys and not to worry about them anymore. Verse 3, "And then shalt thou go forward from thence, and thou shalt come to the plain of Tabor, and there shall meet thee three men going up to God to Bethel, one carrying three kids, and another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. And they will salute thee and give thee two loaves of bread, which thou shalt receive of their hands. After that thou shalt come to the hill of God, where is the garrison of the Philistines. And it shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery and tabret and a pipe and a harp before them. And they shall prophesy, and the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shall be turned into another man." He didn't mean he was going to become someone different, but in other words, God was going to pour out his spirit upon him and anoint him to lead the people. And let it be, when these signs are come unto thee, that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God is with thee. And thou shalt go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come unto thee to offer burnt offerings, and to sacrifice sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days thou shalt tarry. I will come to thee, and will show thee what thou shalt do. So he told him these things that were going to happen to him, and Saul began to travel home then. And the signs that the prophet told him did come to pass, and Saul was made king of Israel. One of the least of the people was made king. God took someone little and set them up, and he made them king. And as long as Saul obeyed God, we're not going to read all these chapters, but when you go home today, you might want to read some. Saul smote the enemies of God. He destroyed the nations around him that were trying to destroy his people. He protected his people and raised them up, and God gave them very great military victories because it was God's plan to help his people and establish his nation there. It called him his inheritance. But the problem with Saul was that after a while, Saul began to be big in his own mind. He began to be vain, powerful. He was a great big man, and he had won all these battles and everything, and he began to not obey God. Just like some of us today, all of us, we shouldn't say some, we all have problems sometimes obeying God. And as we study this story of Saul here today, it helps us understand. Let's turn over to chapter 13 of the book of Samuel now, and we'll continue reading there. Saul reigned 1 year, chapter 13 and verse 1. And when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof were 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with him in Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin, and the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it, and Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." That's God's people. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also was had in abomination with the Philistines, and the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. So they began, this is when they began to overcome their enemies. Verse 5, and the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward of Beth-Aven. So now remember, Saul's over here on his side and he has 3,000 men. And just across the side over there on the other side, the other army has 30,000 chariots. That'd be 10 chariots for every one foot soldier you had. And it's the people that were over there with the Philistines were like the sand on the seashore. There were so many of them. So they were lining up for this battle here. And it appeared that Saul and his people wouldn't have a chance. I mean, can you imagine 3,000 over here and 30,000 horses and chariots on the other side? And such a big army, you couldn't even see them. Verse 6 says, and when the men of Israel saw that they were in strait, in other words, they were in a bad spot, that's what strait means, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in high places and in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. So he was their king, and some of them were sticking with him, but it didn't look very good. And it says some of them were fleeing to other countries, leaving to get out of there. Verse 8, and he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Saul had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul, God was testing Saul, and he told Samuel to tell Saul, go down to this place and prepare there for a sacrifice, and we're going to do that in 7 days. But then the prophet didn't come. God didn't send him down there immediately. He was coming, but he was testing Saul and the people to see what they would do. And it says at the end of verse 8, the people were scattering from him. In other words, every day when the sun came up, more people were leaving. Saul's army was getting littler and littler, and there was less people there to help him. Verse 9, and Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. He was supposed to be waiting for the prophet to come and do it. but he disobeyed God. He lacked the faith to wait it out. Verse 10, and it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offerings, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that thou camest not within the 7 days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself therefore and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. And Samuel arose and gat him up from Gilgal unto Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul numbered the people that were present with him, about 600 men. And Saul and Jonathan his son, and the people that were present with him, abode in Gibeah of Benjamin. But the Philistines encamped in Michmash. And the spoilers came out of the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned unto the way that leadeth to Ophrah, the land of Shaul, and another company turned the way to Beth-horon, and another company turned to the way of the border that looked to the valley of Zeboam, towards the wilderness. Now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. So the Israelites didn't even have any blacksmiths left in their country, because the Philistines had taken them all away because they didn't want them to be able to work on iron and make any weapons of war. Verse 20, but all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share and his coulter, his axe, and his mattock. Yet they had no file for the mattocks, and for the coulters, and for the forks, and for the axes to sharpen the goads. And it came to the pass in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan. But with Saul and with Jonathan, his son, was there found. And the garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. So they came out to this battle, but they hadn't done what God had told them to do in their sacrificing. They went down there and did these things too quickly. And so Saul's kingdom, although God continued to give him some victories to help the people, his family was not to be established over God and his people forever. And they went out and actually won this battle, and I'm not going to read all this several pages of the battle to you. But let's turn over to chapter 15 now. We'll continue reading on there in 1 Samuel 15. Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came out of Egypt. Now and go smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. So God sent him out to another battle. He kept testing Saul to see how Saul would obey and what he would do. And he told Saul at this battle that they were to completely wipe out this group of people because of their wickedness and what they had done. In verse 4 says, Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And Saul said to the Kenites, go, depart, get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. So they told this other tribe that lived there that they needed to leave. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until thou comest to Shur and over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and the best of the oxen and of the fatlings and of the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse they destroyed utterly. So God had given him another chance here. He told him to go out to this battle, and he told him to eliminate this city and everything there. But the Bible tells us that Saul once again didn't obey. He kept the king and brought him back with him, and he brought all these animals. So verse 10, God sent Samuel out to talk to him again. It says, "Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, It repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king." In other words, God told Samuel, "I'm sorry that I made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying, verse 12. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set up a place, and has gone about and passed on, and gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. And Samuel said, What meaneth this bleating of the sheep in my ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? So Saul came to the prophet, and he said, I've done what God told me to do. I have performed his commandment. And the prophet said to him, Well, why do I hear all that cows mooing and all those sheep bleating if you've destroyed this city and brought nothing back like God told you? And Saul didn't want to take the credit himself, so he tried to blame someone else. Verse 15 says, And Saul said, They, in other words the people, have brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. So he tried to twist it around. Now he's king. They're doing what he told them. But he said, Well, the people brought the best of the sheep and all this, but we brought it to give to God, to sacrifice to God. Verse 16, Then Samuel said unto Saul, Stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord hath said to me this night. And he said unto him, Say on. So Samuel told Saul to stay there that night and wait till morning, and God would tell him what he was to do. Verse 17, And Samuel said, When thou wast little, now this is very important here, it says, When thou wast little in thy own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribe of Israel? And the Lord anointed thee king over Israel. And the Lord sent thee on a journey and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Wherefore, when thou didst not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, in other words, they took some of it, and did evil in the sight of the Lord. And Saul said to Samuel, Yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag the king of Amalek, and have destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice them unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. And Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great a delight in burnt offerings and in sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken, that means to hear, than the fat of rams. God didn't want their sacrifices. He didn't want these things to be brought back from the nation of the Amalekites. He wanted them to just do what he told them. Because if you and I do what God tells us, everything will always go good for us. And if we don't, we're in trouble. Verse 23, Samuel tells Saul, and it's for us today also, it says, For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. Because Saul wouldn't obey, God rejected him from being king, and Saul and all his sons died a terrible death on the battlefield. God set him up. He took him when he was a young person and wasn't all proud and was obeying God, and he made him the king. And it was his plan for his family to be the kings over the people forever, their household. But he didn't obey, so he lost what he had. And it tells us there in verse 23, rebellion, that means any form of disobedience is like the sin of witchcraft. Because see, Satan is the one who disobeyed in the beginning. Everything that goes against God and what God wants comes from Satan. Let's turn back and read in chapter 30 of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 30. We want to get this and understand it, because this is really the entire problem with our world today, is that it's out of whack with God, obedience. Deuteronomy chapter 30. This is when they brought them out. They had given them the Ten Commandments and they were bringing them into the land. Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 15 says, "See, I have set thee before thee this day life and good and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply, and that the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But if thy heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shall be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish, and ye shall not prolong your days upon the land whither thou passest over Jordan to go and possess it. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you this day life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that thou, both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life and length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, and to them." So they told him, we've set before you life and death today. If you obey, it's life. If you don't obey, it's death. See, a lot of people don't realize it, but in the things God told them in the Bible, he told them he never intended for us to have prisons today and things like that. God told the people that as they raised their little children, the children had to obey the parents. And he told them if they got to where they couldn't control the children or they were out of control, they actually took them down to the temple and they stoned them. They just, you know, there wasn't this plan that we're going to put people in prison and re-educate them and all that. God's plan was that they would obey and do what they were supposed to do, or he just eliminated them and raised up some more to go. So it's very important to us today that we realize the fact that God's government at the very top is going to be God, and he has his rules for us, and it flows down through the nation, the families, right on down. And it's very important that you children all realize that, you know, you have to obey your parents. You have to do the things that they ask you to do. I want to turn over to Exodus chapter 20 and read for you one of the Ten Commandments. Exodus chapter 20. Beginning in verse 12. I want you children to all especially think about this. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12, it says, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." God wants us as mothers and fathers to be good to our children and to love them, but he expects you children to obey your parents. You have to do what your parents ask you to do. See, we live in a land where rebellion is seen as great. All the people on TV are in rebellion, you know, rebellion against the law, rebellion against this, and all that. But that's not God's plan. God's plan is that we be in subjection unto the proper authorities. We know sometimes authority isn't right, but if it is, we're supposed to be under that. And as we come down to the family level, we have to get things started there. So God has told us that We are to honor our father and our mother. And honor means obey. So as your parents are... as your parents tell you things, they're actually trying to save you from having to go through bad things that they went through. As you get older and you look back on it and you realize the things that your mother and father told you not to do, and you went ahead and did them, they all led to sorrow, sadness. And so your parents are actually trying to tell you things to help us out. And God's trying to tell us things also. He is our parent, and he's telling us what he needs us to do so we can navigate through our life in this world in peace and joy. And he's carried that on down to the household level because he wants us to get the children going in the right direction. The Bible says, train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he's old he won't depart from it. Doesn't mean we'll never make mistakes, but we want to try to put that love for God in our children, and then we have to expect that the children will obey and do what they're supposed to do, and we don't want to have to take things beyond that level. But if we have to, then God has laid out for us the fact that the Bible says if we spare the discipline, we spoil the children. So in other words, we have to have law and order beginning at the government level, coming on down to the household. And as we have that, then we have peace amongst ourselves. So we could take our little analogy that we started with, and we could say if you went to a country and they all run the stoplights and they don't respect people's property rights and all that kind of stuff, it becomes a state of anarchy. It becomes a place that's not good to live because it's not peaceful there. There's no respect for anything there. And so we take that all the way down to our home level. If we have that same thing going on at our house, then our house becomes a type of anarchy, and you can't keep things going and it won't run smoothly and all that. So I'm not going to go into that a lot more today, but I just want you to realize, especially you children, I want you to really think about the fact that you have to honor your father and your mother. And you have to obey them. Do the things they ask. Sometimes I can remember doing lots of things that they're not always fun, but all those little things, that's what keeps the house moving smoothly, you know. If mom and dad tell you to do the dishes, somebody has to do the dishes. Every now and then my kids look at me and say, we do the dishes all the time, Dad. And I tell them, well, you know, I did them for years and years and years, and I used to wash your bottle for you quite often too, so you can wash my glass every now and then, you know. So we have to realize sometimes you have to sit down and talk to the kids and help them think it through. But, you know, we all have to be in our little spot. We're like ball bearings in a big wheel, and you have to have all of them in there. If you don't have them all in there, it doesn't work. But when we get that all working correctly and it all gets smooth, then things operate smoothly, and we can have much greater joy and blessing in our families. And then as we grow up with respect for authority, we have that even as we get older, and it'll keep us out of trouble with the law and everything else, and it's preparing us to go to heaven and live with God, because in heaven there's not going to be any more disobedience at any level. Children, adults, Satan, it's not going to be there anymore. And God has made that covenant with us that if we obey him, we'll be able to live in his new earth. We've all disobeyed him, so that's why we had to have Jesus come and die, so he could free of our disobedience. But now he wants to help us learn to obey so that we can walk out the gates of the New Jerusalem and live in peace and harmony there on the new earth. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy great name. We thank you for the beautiful Sabbath day, Father. Thank you for your many blessings to us. We ask today, Father, that you pour out your Spirit upon us all in a very special way. Help us as children to realize that we have to obey our parents and to be helpful and joyful, and help us as parents to have love towards our children that we should have, and help us to have love for you, Father, in heaven, and to honor and obey you and bring great glory into your name by having things in good order. Help us to be ready to go home with you when you come. We ask today that you bless all those who are hurting and in need. In Jesus' holy name we ask these things. Thy will be done, Almighty Father. Amen.